Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to ModPath Chat, the official podcast of Modern Pathology, featuring interviews with authors and experts on the latest science, technology, and developments in the field of pathology. Your host, Dr. George Netto, is the editor-in-chief of Modern Pathology and the chair of pathology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Here's Dr. Netto.
Welcome to the third episode of ModPath Chat. Our guest today is Dr. Laura Wood, Associate Professor of Pathology and Oncology at Johns Hopkins University. Dr. Wood is one of the leading physician scientists in the field of GI pathology with a focus on pancreatic cancer research. She's here today to discuss with us her recent study that will be published in the next issue of the journal Modern Pathology. The study involves a quantitative assessment of intraductal carcinoma in pancreatic resections following key neoadjuvant chemotherapy. Welcome, Laura. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, George, for having me and for your interest in our work.
All right. It was a great study, and we surely wanted to take it a step further and discuss the design and implications. So let's start by asking you what led you and your team to perform this study. What was the question you were trying to answer?
Sure. So over the past several years in pancreatic cancer, neoadjuvant chemotherapy, so chemotherapy before surgery, has become more and more common and is becoming near universal, at least in the United States. This leads to important clinical questions for us as pathologists to assess the treatment response in our pancreatic resection specimens. And in the course of doing this, my pancreatic pathology colleagues at Hopkins and I noticed that some cases where there was a really strong response to the neoadjuvant chemotherapy, we noticed that a large proportion of the residual cancer cells were actually residing in the pancreatic ducts. Pancreatic cancer is known to not only invade the stroma, but also invade back into and spread along the duct system, something that's been referred to as cancerization of the ducts in the pancreas and other organs. And we noticed that some resection specimens, again, with a strong chemotherapy response, had a lot of cells left in the ducts. And this led us to wonder more broadly if this intraductal location of cancer cells could impact the response to neoadjuvant chemotherapy.
Thank you. So just to be clear, this is cancerization of duct. This is different than Pannon. Because I remember my days at Hopkins, every specimen has Pannon. We're not talking about that.
No. We're not talking about Pannon. So Pannon is pancreatic intraepithelial neoplasia. And that's a premalignant lesion, meaning it is neoplastic cells in the duct that have not yet invaded. Cancerization of the duct is different. This is cancer that's been in the stroma and goes back into the duct and spreads along the duct. It's kind of a clear-cut conceptual distinction, but it's not always so clear-cut on a slide. And one of the challenges in this study and in any study on Pannon and cancerization is how do you tell the two apart? And we have some histologic features that we can use to try to be confident in what we're categorizing as cancerization versus Pannon.
I see. And I don't know, that played in when you were talking about the slide selections and what do you quantify exactly as cancerization of duct,
which is
retrograde versus Pannon, which is more like a precursor.
Yeah, and I think there's been a greater appreciation of cancerization in recent years, especially in the pancreas. And I think previously a lot of what we've been studying as Panin-3 is actually cancerization. So this intraductal spread of invasive cancer is particularly common in the pancreas. And I think it's important to understand it as a potential confounder of Panin as well.
Right. Not to deviate on the subject, but we have the same issues in prostate cancer. Is it high-grade pan intraductal carcinoma or really a cancerization of duct? So it's amazing how different organs share a lot in common. So let's move on to then the study design. Can you briefly share with us how you went about answering this question?
Sure. I mean, one of the big challenges with any sort of pre and post treatment study is that you don't get to examine the resection in both situations. So for the neoadjuvant treated cases, you only have a small FNA or needle biopsy of pre-treatment and then the resection post-treatment, and you can't accurately assess COD or cancerization on such a small piece of tissue pre-treatment. And so instead of doing pre and post from the same patient, we did two large independent cohorts. One set of patients that went to immediate surgery, so 77 patients that did not get neoadjuvant therapy, and then 97 patients who did. And we, you know, in detail examined the resection specimens in both of those cohorts and tried to quantify the cancerization of the duct.
Excellent. So you did that based on H&E, or you did that, I realize from reading the study, you selected a single slide that is representative, and usually it's from the center of the tumor, if I remember.
Yeah. So we, we looked at all the clinical and pathologic features of every case. And so we looked at the prevalence of cancerization of the duct, meaning just, is it there or not there? But then we also tried to quantify the proportion of cells that were intraductal. And to do that, we actually picked one representative slide from the center of the tumor, and we did a cytokeratin 19 immunohistochemical stain and used HALO image analysis so that we could actually count the number of cells that were in the duct and in the stroma in one representative section from each tumor.
And then you compared the two groups and...
Right, we compared the proportion of intraductal cells between the tumors that had received neoadjuvant chemotherapy and those that had not received neoadjuvant chemotherapy. So this wasn't an eyeball estimate of whether it looked like there was more. It's actually a quantitative assessment of the number of cells in the duct versus the number of cells in the stroma in both groups.
And explain how did the why use CK19? How did that help? I mean,
The CK19 helps with the image annotation. So we can annotate just broad areas that have that are either intraductal or stromal, and then the image analysis program can count the number of cytokeratin 19 positive cells in those areas. Whereas if you use an H&E, you'd have to individually count each, a human would have to individually count and annotate each cancer cell. Whereas if we do only the cytokeratin 19 positive cells, it's much more simple to do the quantitative analysis. Importantly though, it wasn't like we just CK19 stained the slide and analyzed the whole slide. We actually did this analysis and annotated while looking at the H&E to make sure we were annotating morphologically the right regions to then do the quantitative analysis.
So there was an active involvement.
Yeah, not surprisingly, the first author on this study is actually a pathologist as well and did all the annotation.
As it should be.
Yes.
So as far as the results, I know you found a lot of stuff, but what would be the most important salient findings of this study?
So I think the most important findings are that the prevalence of cancerization is actually not different between patients who got immediate surgery and patients who had the neoadjuvant therapy, meaning having neoadjuvant therapy doesn't change the likelihood that the cancer gets into the duct. What it does change is the proportion of cancer cells that remain in the duct after therapy. So we found that in the immediate surgery group, it's only a very small proportion of cancer cells, so about 2%. That remained in the duct. And that's compared to almost 13% in the patients that had neoadjuvant therapy. So there's a larger proportion of intraductal cancer cells in the group that received neoadjuvant therapy. And this was also strikingly correlated with the response to therapy. So within that neoadjuvant group, the group that had the highest proportion of cells in the duct was the group that had the strongest response to chemotherapy. So when the cancer and the stroma responded very well, the cancer in the duct then was a larger proportion of the remaining tumor.
Just for the people like myself who don't do day-to-day do pancreatic cancer. So the evaluation of the response currently as it stands, there's some well-defined criteria, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for asking that. So there's a scoring system that CAP has designated where it's scored from 0 to 3 based on the response to therapy, 0 being no residual tumor and 3 being really minimal response to the therapy. And we saw that the largest proportion of intraductal cells were in the CAP category 1, meaning that there was a strong response of that stromal cancer, but really the cells within the duct seem not to be as responsive.
All right. So it sounds like a relative survival of the cells in the stroma are dying or being eliminated versus the one in the duct. And that's why in that highest response group or second highest, which is CAP 1, is where you're finding a lot of intraductal or cancerization of duct.
Yeah, and I think that observation that it's in the group that responds the most, where you still have the most cells in the duct, is important because maybe an alternative explanation one might posit is that because you can't study the same tumor before and after therapy, that there's some sort of difference between the group that got neoadjuvant and the group that got immediate surgery. And you could say the neoadjuvant tumors are just more aggressive. They just happen to be in the duct more because they're more aggressive. And I think that the two points that argue against that are, one, that the prevalence of intraductal growth is similar between the two groups. And then also that it's the tumors that respond the best that have the most cells remaining in the duct. So it's not the most aggressive. It really is this residual intraductal cells after chemotherapy.
This is a good segue into trying to explain why we found that. Why are tumor cells within the duct being protected? I know you entertained a couple of ideas, so can you share with us?
Sure, of course. I mean, I think there are two possible hypotheses, and we can't really address which of these is true with our data because this is really a morphologic observation at this point. But I think the two possibilities are, one, that there's something different about the tumor cells that are in the duct that make them less responsive. I think that there's not data support that there's, you know, a different driver gene DNA mutation or something of those cells in the duct, but they are growing in a different space. They could have different gene expression or different other molecular properties that make them less responsive to the chemotherapy. So the first option is that there's something different about the tumor cells. The second option is that it's really a question of delivery of chemotherapy. Once the cells get into the duct, they're again surrounded by the basement membrane. There's not, you know, the vascular access of tumors that are in the stroma. And so it's possible that the chemotherapeutic agents just don't reach those cells in the duct in the same way that it reaches the cells in the stroma. I think a morphological observation that supports that is that when you look at the morphologic features, the atypia and the cytoplasmic changes that we associate with treatment with neoadjuvant chemotherapy, you don't really see those changes as prevalently in the neoplastic cells in the duct. So that suggests that they're not getting that same effect of the chemotherapy, and it could be an issue of delivery. But again, this is something that would have to be, you know, tested in more experimental models.
I like that morphology still play a huge role in trying to understand the etiology and causation like this. So, and I tend to agree. I think the delivery is probably an important player here. So what are the implications of this study finding going forward? Is this going to change anything on how we evaluate specimens post-resections?
Yeah, I mean, I think practically, this does raise the issue of what we should do with intraductal tumor cells when we see them in neoadjuvant resected specimens. The current CAP grading system doesn't suggest that those are really counted toward cancer, though it doesn't explicitly acknowledge what to do with them. But I think that this study really shows that these are intraductal cancer cells. And if, you know, they're there, they could be a nidus for recurrence. And so we should consider more formal recommendations of what to do with intraductal cancer cells that are there post-neoadjuvant.
And again, to clarify, I mean, we refer to them as intraductal, and usually classically we think of those as pre-invasive. So these are actually invasive tumors that
absolutely
cancerized, cancerization of the pre-existing duct. So so by all means, they have the capacity to do bad things, and having a residual tumor that is invasive, albeit sitting in the duct, is not a good thing, probably.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's really important to distinguish these from carcinoma in situ, which would be, you know, pan-in or premalignant lesions. These really are cancer cells that have invaded the stroma and then invaded back into the duct. I mean, I think the important future direction for this research is to try to determine better what implications these intraductal cancer cells after neoadjuvant chemotherapy have on prognosis. You know, our cohort wasn't powered to say anything about, you know, the outcomes implications, but I think that's going to be an important feature to consider when we're thinking about how to potentially modify response grading screens based on these results.
Sounds like another study already in mind, looking at
the of course. That's what we do.
I wouldn't be surprised, knowing you, Laura. Thank you. Laura. This was an enjoyable discussion. And I thank you for supporting the journal with your submission. And I look forward to inviting you, hopefully, to join our editorial board and help us with other studies.
Thank you, George, for having me and for publishing our work and helping us to disseminate the results of this study.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
Any opinions expressed in this podcast are the speaker's own and do not represent the views of Modern Pathology, Springer Nature, UAB, or USCAP. Your ModPath chat host and scientific director is Dr. George Netto. Producers are Christina Crow, Amber Jackson, Dr. Sarah Jang, and Dr. Catherine Ketchum. Technical direction is provided by Kaminsky Productions, music by Mitch Neubauer. Thanks to the authors, reviewers, and editors of Modern Pathology for making this podcast possible.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.